Chapter 152. Short of the place where he was stationed, and at every such disappointment he felt quite chilled and lonely. At length he felt it was hopeless to remain, and going downstairs again, inquired of one of the lodgers, if he knew anything of Mr. Squeers' movements, mentioning, that were he by an assumed name which had been agreed upon between them. By this lodger he was referred to another, and by him to someone else, from whom he learned, that, late on the previous night, he had gone out hastily with two men, who had shortly afterwards returned for the old woman who lived on the same floor, and that, although the circumstance had attracted the attention of the informant, he had not spoken to them at the time, nor made any inquiry afterwards. This possessed him with the idea that, perhaps, Pecksniff had been apprehended for the robbery, and that Mr. Squeers, being with her at the time, had been apprehended also, on suspicion of being a confederate. If this were so, the fact must be known to Gride, and to Gride's house he directed his steps, now thoroughly alarmed, and fearful that there were indeed plots afoot, tending to his discomfiture and ruin. Arrived at the usurer's house, he found the windows close shut, the dingy blinds drawn down. All was silent, melancholy, and deserted. But this was its usual aspect. He knocked gently at first, then loud and vigorously. Nobody came. He wrote a few words in pencil on a card, and having thrust it under the door was going away, when a noise above, as though a window sash were stealthily raised, caught his ear, and looking up he could just discern the face of Gride himself, cautiously peering over the house parapet from the window of the garret. Seeing who was below, he drew it in again, not so quickly, however, but that Ralph let him know he was observed, and called to him to come down. The call being repeated, Gride looked out again, so cautiously that no part of the old man's body was visible. The sharp features and white hair appearing alone, above the parapet, looked like a severed head garnishing the wall. "Hush! Apostrophe, apostrophe," he cried. "Go away, go away! Apostrophe, come down, apostrophe," said Ralph, beckoning him. "Go away! Apostrophe, apostrophe," Squeak cried, shaking his head in a sort of ecstasy of impatience. "Don't speak to me, don't knock, don't call attention to the house, but go away. Apostrophe, I'll knock, I swear, till I have your neighbors up in arms, apostrophe," said Ralph, "if you don't tell me what you mean by lurking there, you whining cur. Apostrophe, I can't hear what you say, don't talk to me, it isn't safe, go away, go away." "Apostrophe, apostrophe," returned Gride. "Come down, I say. Will you come down?" apostrophe said Ralph fiercely. "No, oh, oh, ooh," apostrophe snarled Gride. He drew in his head, and Ralph, left standing in the street, could hear the sash closed, as gently and carefully as it had been opened. "How is this, apostrophe," said he, "that they all fall from me, and shun me like the plague, these men who have licked the dust from my feet? Is my day past, and is this indeed the coming on of night? I'll know what it means. I will, at any cost. I am firmer and more myself, just now, than I have been these many days." Apostrophe, turning from the door, which, in the first transport of his rage, he had meditated battering upon until Gride's very fears should impel him to open it, he turned his face towards the city, and working his way steadily through the crowd which was pouring from it. It was by this time between 5 and 6 o'clock in the afternoon, went straight to the house of business of the brothers Cheerable, and putting his head into the glass case, found Tim Linkinwater alone. "My name's Nickleby, apostrophe," said Ralph. "I know it, apostrophe," replied Tim, surveying him through his spectacles. "Which of your firm was it who called on me this morning?" apostrophe, apostrophe, demanded Ralph. "Mr. Charles." "Apostrophe, then, tell Mr. Charles I want to see him." "Apostrophe, you shall see, apostrophe," said Tim, getting off his stool with great agility, "you shall see, not only Mr. Charles, but Mr. Ned likewise. Apostrophe, Tim stopped, looked steadily and severely at Ralph, nodded his head once, in a curt manner which seemed to say there was a little more behind, and vanished. After a short interval, he returned, and, ushering Ralph into the presence of the two brothers, remained in the room himself. I want to speak to you, who spoke to me this morning, apostrophe said Ralph, pointing out with his finger the man whom he addressed. I have no secrets from my brother Ned, or from Tim Linkinwater, apostrophe observed Brother Charles quietly. I have, apostrophe said Ralph. Mr. Nickleby, sir, apostrophe said Brother Ned, the matter upon which my brother Charles called upon you this morning is one which is already perfectly well known to us three, and to others besides, and must unhappily soon become known to a great many more. He waited upon you, sir, this morning, alone, as a matter of delicacy and consideration. We feel, now, that further delicacy and consideration would be misplaced. And, if we confer together, it must be as we are, or not at all. Apostrophe, well, gentlemen, apostrophe said Ralph with a curl of the lip, talking in riddles would seem to be the peculiar forte of you two, and I suppose your clerk, like a prudent man, has studied the art also with a view to your good graces. Talk in company, gentlemen, in God's name. I'll humor you. Apostrophe, humor. Apostrophe, apostrophe, cried Tim Linkinwater, suddenly growing very red in the face. He'll humor us. He'll humor Cheerable Brothers. Do you hear that? Do you hear him? Do you hear him say he'll humor Cheerable Brothers? Apostrophe, apostrophe, Tim, apostrophe, said Charles and Ned together. Pray, Tim, pray now, don't. Apostrophe, Tim. Taking the hint, stifled his indignation as well as he could, and suffered it to escape through his spectacles, with the additional safety valve of a short hysterical laugh now and then, which seemed to relieve him mightily. As nobody bids me to a seat, apostrophe said Ralph, looking round, I'll take one, for I am fatigued with walking. And now, if you please, gentlemen, I wish to know, I demand to know. I have the right what you have to say to me, which justifies such a tone as you have assumed, and that underhand interference in my affairs which, I have reason to suppose, you have been practicing. I tell you plainly, gentlemen, that little as I care for the opinion of the world as the slang goes, I don't choose to submit quietly to slander and malice. Whether you suffer yourselves to be imposed upon too easily, or willfully make yourselves parties to it, the result to me is the same. In either case, you can't expect from a plain man like myself much consideration or forbearance. Apostrophe, so coolly and deliberately was this said, that 9 men out of 10, ignorant of the circumstances, would have supposed Ralph to be really an injured man. There he sat, with folded arms. Paler than usual, certainly, and sufficiently ill-favored, but quite collected far more so than the brothers, or the exasperated Tim and ready to face out the worst. Very well, sir, apostrophe said Brother Charles. Very well. Brother Ned, will you ring the bell? Apostrophe, apostrophe, Charles, my dear fellow. Stop one instant, apostrophe returned the other. It will be better for Mr. Nickleby and for our object that he should remain silent, if he can, till we have said what we have to say. I wish him to understand that. Apostrophe, quite right, apostrophe said Brother Charles. Ralph smiled, but made no reply. The bell was rung, the room door opened, a man came in, with a halting walk, and, looking round, Ralph's eyes met those of Newman Knox. From that moment, his heart began to fail him. This is a good beginning, apostrophe he said bitterly. Oh, this is a good beginning. You are candid, honest, open-hearted, fair-dealing men. I always knew the real worth of such characters as yours. To tamper with a fellow like this, who would sell his soul if he had one, for drink, and whose every word is a lie. What men are safe, if this is done? Oh, it's a good beginning. Apostrophe, I will speak, apostrophe, cried Newman, standing on tiptoe to look over Tim's head, who had interposed to prevent him. Hallo, you sir old Nickleby. What do you mean when you talk of a fellow like this? Who made me a fellow like this? If I would sell my soul for drink, why wasn't I a thief, swindler, housebreaker, area sneak, robber of pence out of the trays of blind men's dogs, rather than your drudge and packers? If my every word was a lie, why wasn't I a pet and favorite of yours? Lie! When did I ever cringe and fawn to you? Tell me that. I served you faithfully. I did more work, because I was poor, and took more hard words from you, because I despised you and them, than any man you could have got from the parish workhouse. I did. I served you, because I was proud, because I was a lonely man with you, and there were no other drudges to see my degradation, and because nobody knew, better than you, that I was a ruined man, that I hadn't always been what I am, and that I might have been better off, if I hadn't been a fool, and fallen into the hands of you, and others who were knaves. Do you deny that? Apostrophe, gently, apostrophe, reasoned Tim, you said you wouldn't. Apostrophe, I said I wouldn't. Apostrophe, apostrophe, cried Newman, thrusting him aside, and moving his hand as Tim moved, so as to keep him at arm's length. Don't tell me. Here, you Nickleby. Don't pretend not to mind me. It won't do. I know better. You were talking of tampering, just now. Who tampered with Yorkshire schoolmasters, and, while they sent the drudge out, that he shouldn't overhear, forgot that such great caution might render him suspicious, and that he might watch his master out at nights, and might set other eyes to watch the schoolmaster. Who tampered with a selfish father, urging him to sell his daughter to old Arthur Gride, and tampered with Gride too, and did so in the little office, with a closet in the room. Apostrophe, apostrophe, Ralph had put a great command upon himself, but he could not have suppressed a slight start if he had been certain to be beheaded for it next moment. Aha! Apostrophe, apostrophe, cried Newman, you mind me now, do you? What first set this fag to be jealous of his master's actions, and to feel that, if he hadn't crossed him when he might, he would have been as bad as he, or worse? That master's cruel treatment of his own flesh and blood, and vile designs upon a young girl who interested even his broken-down, drunken miserable hack, and made him linger in his service, in the hope of doing her some good, as, thank God, he had done others once or twice before, when he would, otherwise, have relieved his feelings, by pummeling his master soundly, and then going to the devil. He would mark that, and mark this, that I'm here now, because these gentlemen thought it best. When I sought them out as I did, there was no tampering with me. I told them I wanted help to find you out, to trace you down, to go through with what I had begun, to help the right, and that when I had done it, I'd burst into your room, and tell you all, face to face, man to man, and like a man. Now I've said my say, and let anybody else say theirs, and fire away. Apostrophe, apostrophe, with this concluding sentiment, Newman Knox, who had been perpetually sitting down, and getting up again all through his speech, which he had delivered in a series of jerks, and who was, from the violent exercise and the excitement combined, in a state of most intense and fiery heat, became, without passing through any intermediate stage, stiff, upright, and motionless, and so remained, staring at Ralph Nickleby with all his might and main. Ralph looked at him for an instant, and for an instant only, then, waved his hand, and beating the ground with his foot, said in a choking voice, go on, gentlemen, go on. I'm patient, you see. There's law to be had, there's law. I shall call you to an account for this. Take care what you say, I shall make you prove it. Apostrophe, the proof is ready, apostrophe, returned Brother Charles, quite ready to our hands. The man Snolly, last night, made a confession. Apostrophe, who may the man Snolly be, apostrophe, returned Ralph, and what may his confession have to do with my affairs? apostrophe apostrophe, to this inquiry, put with a dogged inflexibility of manner, the old gentleman returned no answer, but went on to say, that to show him how much they were in earnest, it would be necessary to tell him, not only what accusations were made against him, but what proof of them they had, and how that proof had been acquired. This laying open of the whole question brought up Brother Ned, Tim Linkinwater, and Newman Knox, all three at once, who, after a vast deal of talking together, and a scene of great confusion, laid before Ralph, in distinct terms, the following statement. That, Newman, having been solemnly assured by one not then producible, that Smike was not the son of Snolly, and this person having offered to make oath to that effect, if necessary, they had by this communication been first led to doubt the claim set up, which they would otherwise have seen no reason to dispute, supported as it was by evidence which they had no power of disproving. That, once suspecting the existence of a conspiracy, they had no difficulty in tracing back its origin to the malice of Ralph, and the vindictiveness and avarice of Squeers. That, suspicion and proof being two very different things, they had been advised by a lawyer, eminent for his sagacity and acuteness in such practice, to resist the proceedings taken on the other side for the recovery of the youth as slowly and artfully as possible, and meanwhile to beset Snolly, with whom it was clear the main falsehood must rest, to lead him, if possible, into contradictory and conflicting statements, to harass him by all available means, and so to practice on his fears, and regard for his own safety, as to induce him to divulge the whole scheme, and to give up his employer, and whomsoever else he could implicate. That, all this had been skillfully done, but that Snolly, who was well practiced in the arts of low cunning and intrigue, had successfully baffled all their attempts, until an unexpected circumstance had brought him, last night, upon his knees. It thus arose. When Newman Knox reported that Squeers was again in town, and that an interview of such secrecy had taken place between him and Ralph, that he had been sent out of the house, plainly lest he should overhear a word, a watch was set upon the schoolmaster, in the hope that something might be discovered which would throw some light upon the suspected plot. It being found, however, that he held no further communication with Ralph, nor any with Snolly, and lived quite alone, they were completely at fault. The watch was withdrawn, and they would have observed his motions no longer, if it had not happened that, one night, Newman stumbled unobserved on him, and Ralph in the street together. Following them, he discovered, to his surprise, that they repaired to various low lodging houses, and taverns kept by broken gamblers, to more than one of whom Ralph was known, and that they were in pursuit, so he found by inquiries, when they had left, of an old woman, whose description exactly tallied with that of deaf Mrs. Sliderskew. Affairs now appearing to assume a more serious complexion, the watch was renewed with increased vigilance. An officer was procured, who took up his abode in the same tavern with Squeers. And by him, and Frank Cheeryble, the footsteps of the unconscious schoolmaster were dogged, until he was safely housed in the lodging at Lambeth. Mr. Squeers having shifted. Gutenberg edition. End of chapter.